At the end of 2023, Broadcom bought VMware for a whopping $61 billion. Since the acquisition closed, there's been a lot of turmoil, to say the least, among VMware customers. They've been hit with substantial price increases, the end of perpetual non-subscription licenses, they've had issues with support, and there's been the removal of previously free products from the VMware catalog. The Microsoft, AWS, and Google sharks have been circling, smelling blood in the water. Forrester Research went so far as to predict that as of late last year, they thought up to 20% of VMware customers would defect as a result. Welcome to the Directions on Microsoft Briefing podcast. I'm Mary Jo Foley, the editor-in-chief here at Directions. I'm your host for this series of podcasts for those interested in the Microsoft Enterprise IT ecosystem. Today's episode is dedicated to VMware customers who are feeling the squeeze and who want to know their alternatives, specifically their Microsoft alternatives. My guests today are Directions analysts Jim Gaynor and Wes Miller. Jim spearheads our coverage of Windows Server, Teams, and other collaboration technologies, as well as enterprise infrastructure. Wes has been co-leading Directions on Microsoft's licensing boot camps for more than 12 years. In addition to teaching as part of the boot camps, Wes analyzes and writes about Azure infrastructure services, including Azure Virtual Machines and Azure Active Directory, as well as Microsoft Systems Management Technologies. Hello, both of you. Thank you for joining me today on this podcast.
Well, thank you. It feels like, oh gosh, I haven't been on a podcast forever.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Okay, so before Broadcom bought VMware, Microsoft and VMware were basically arch enemies, right? But now, at least to me, it almost feels like they're frenemies, with Broadcom actually partnering with Microsoft on transitioning customers who want specific virtualization capabilities that Broadcom has no plans to offer. So is this a fair characterization, Jim?
It sounds, the arch enemies feels a little strong. I mean, Okay. Yes, Microsoft's definitely chummier with Broadcom than it was with VMware. But I think it's because Broadcom considers them useful. Like, oh, hey, you're useful. Like you implied, Broadcom's cutting off or alienating a whole lot of VMware customers. They like the perpetual offerings. They were partnered with smaller resellers. But Broadcom's really just focusing on the most profitable customers, it feels like. You know, anybody who's like the long tail isn't really huge. They don't care. They're happy to cut them off, and they're happy to let Microsoft take them, and Microsoft is willing to play a longer game and say, sure, we'll bring them into Azure. Mm-hmm. But even so, they're definitely chummier on that one. They're definitely both looking to use the other for their own benefit. Mm-hmm. But even Microsoft and VMware semi-cooperated at times. I mean, we did get Azure VMware solution under VMware after a few false starts. That was Microsoft doing it directly, VMware blessing it after some scuffles at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And we've got things like System Center and Azure Backup and Azure Site Recovery and other services that work with VMware. You could use them to co-manage or interoperate with VMware stuff. I mean, it's kind of like how Microsoft works when they know they can't just squash a competitor. They work with Embrace, Expand, Exterminate. We all know that one. But, you know, they're still kind of semi-cooperating. But I don't think there's any tears being shed over Microsoft over the current state of affairs. You mentioned it right. You know, all the sharks are circling.
I believe it's extinguish, not exterminate, Jim.
That said, I've been watching a little bit too much Doctor Who, okay?
It is interesting, though, you know, because like at the boot camp, we typically hear from an enormous number of customers who are using VMware, not Hyper-V. And I think that is reflected here. It goes right to your point, Jim, that Broadcom knows that in these largest hills, there's a huge customer base of people who are either too large to go away from or just willing to deal with the pain of a new world of VMware licensing.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the alternatives that Microsoft is bringing to the table, starting with the aforementioned Azure VMware solution and VMware Rapid Migration Plan. What are these things? And do they actually provide a good deal for the disenfranchised or no?
I'm going to steal one of Wes's lines. It depends. Particularly, Wes, but it's really on what you want to get out of it. I mean, you've got Azure VMware solution. I'm just going to go with AVS for now. You guys Azure VMware Solution, AVS. Look, it's a great target for a VMware lift and shift from a technical standpoint because it's VMware. It's 100% VMware hosted in Microsoft's cloud. They give you dedicated servers. You've got your own little thing setting up. So there you go. If you really want to get out of VMware, get out someplace else and move there, you can do it. But it's not inexpensive. It's got fair number of additional engineering requirements. And it's not really built for just moving a few small workloads. If you've got a relatively small amount of VMware in your environment that doesn't require a cluster of servers or anything, then this isn't where you want to go. It doesn't have anything for you. I mean, AVS requires at least 3 nodes in a cluster. So you need to make sure that all your workloads can fit on 2 nodes because Microsoft can take them down one at a time for maintenance and upgrade because it's a Microsoft managed service. They do the maintenance and the upgrades for you. So they'll take down one node and, you know, go through. You got to have ExpressRoute or some other routing solution to connect your VMware little private cloud in Azure to any on-premises solutions. And you're still going to need to bring in Azure services like Azure Monitor and Entra ID for management and monitoring. And if your customer likes sitting on one version of VMware, well, you know, AVS, like I said, it's managed by Microsoft. So they're going to be the ones applying patches on their timeline. But if you need to park for a breather, and your goal is to move to Azure VMs, then AVS could have you covered. It's still something that's there. And the VMware Rapid Migration plan that you mentioned can help with that one. It's interesting. There's reserved instances in Azure VMs and a lot of other Azure stuff, which normally give you discounts of like 30 to 50% or above for committing to buy 1 to 3 years of a service. The rapid migration plan for VMware gives you an extra 20% off the discounted price. So it's not like here's your 30%, suddenly we'll bump you up to 50%. We'll take 30% off, then we'll take another 20% off of that. For a 1-year reserved instance, that bumps your cumulative to a little over 40% off if you commit to buying it for a full year. And then just for this promotion, this migration plan, they're offering a 5-year term, which they normally don't have. So you'll still get your discounts for the 5-year term if you say, hey, I really need VMware in Azure for 5 years. But the benefit on this one is all the reserved instances lock in the pricing. You say this is what the pricing is, and that's your pricing for the entire term. So even if Broadcom raises their prices, which I'm sure they're going to do because they're obviously focused on getting all the money out of it, you'll be paying Microsoft the reserved instance price. But all of that is a promotion that closes at the end of the year. At the end of this year, it'll be back to only 1 to 3 years available, and that extra bonus won't be there. There's one other thing, too. I mean, if you're a big customer, really big customer, and you're net new to Azure, you don't have Azure at all, Microsoft is willing to negotiate. They say this depends. You need to talk to a rep. But they might give you some Azure Cloud credit as part of the program. I think it's like up to $120,000 worth of Azure Cloud credit. But you can't bank on it until you talk to a rep and kind of make that deal. Then they're probably going to want to make you a poster child for what they're doing. So those two things together can mean, hey, you've got a place that if you can want to jump out of where you are with VMware, maybe your provider is passing along the costs, maybe it's a smaller provider or whatever, you can move to AVS. It's still VMware. It's the same tools you've been using. You can take advantage of the rapid migration plan if you know you're going to be there for 1 or 3 or even 5 years. And if you're brand new to Azure, maybe you can get a discount on it. So there's still other things that make it difficult, that make it challenging, make no mistake, but it gives you that option and could hopefully help alleviate some of the costs of it.
There's also something in this VMware migration plan that's called licensing portability. So how does that fit in?
Okay, yeah. So they promote it as part of the rapid migration plan, but really it's just normal Azure VM benefits that apply to AVS as well, no matter how you got it. So for example, you get like your ESUs at no extra cost, and there's all the Azure hybrid benefit stuff that applies to Azure VMs, applies to AVS. Wes, you know this a lot better than I do.
I think at the end of the day, when you look at the AVS, Jim summarized all the key points really well. And, you know, we sat down and tried to nail this down when Microsoft said, look at all these huge benefits. And the more we filtered it down, we're like, okay, there's like 4 and they're very interesting, but it is important for customers to understand this is limbo. You do not want to stay here unless you know this is where you want to stay, you know, for 5 years. So first of all, you got to act fast because you've got to move. You have to basically sign up and get it started by the end of this year. So you're going to be paying before 2025 starts. And you've got that 5 year lock, let's say your best case. And Jim's absolutely right. If there's ever a sure thing that you're going to bet on, it's that the prices are going to rise on everything else. So Microsoft and Broadcom are clearly aligned in the sense that VMware within AVS is sort of a favored state where customers could go if they want to stay with VMware technology, but they're willing to accept cloud-based pricing and understanding that you don't control that for the long term. But yeah, at the end of the day, there's a couple of neat spiffs, neat benefits that customers can get. But this is sort of a, I want to keep the technology and I'm willing to pay cloud prices. And every choice you have in leaving VMware on-prem, that's what you face is, am I leaving the technology? Am I leaving the licensing or both? And here, the big thing is you get to take your licenses from on-prem with Microsoft to Azure. But again, as Jim and I have talked about many times, that's not new. That's really a normal Azure benefit. You get free ESUs in Azure, normal Azure benefit. Microsoft is touting them as part of the AVS rapid migration plan. But the net is that basically AVS is the best place to run Microsoft software on VMware in a cloud.
Okay. I want to add one other thing too. One with AVS, since you're deploying hardware, the moment that you sign up for this, you're paying. It doesn't matter, you know, they deploy the servers and you're paying for them immediately. It doesn't matter if you've configured them or moved over your workloads. It's not based on the number of VMware VMs you've got. Like the moment you sign up for it, boom, you're paying for it. Mm. So that's another thing in the whole move fast thing and plan before you go.
Yeah, I think that's a huge thing too. You have to really remind people because a lot of people think of you know, as we were talking the other day, Mary Jo, about, you know, PaaS versus IaaS and how Azure's evolved. I think when we look at the VMware solution, it is very interesting because they've basically taken the on-prem offering. AWS has the same thing in VMware Cloud and AWS, which was there first, and there's actually a lot of customers there. But this is effectively a data center running in a cloud, and it is a dedicated host instance. And in the case here, Jim's mentioned, at least 3 and up to 16. These are not small boxes, and this is a lot of money for you to just spin up. So you got to be ready to go, not think about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I probably should have asked this question first, but this is a nice segue to it. If you are going to migrate VMware to Azure, what are the things that should be on your checklist before you decide I'm going all in with Microsoft's cloud?
Okay, so this is, you're going all in on Azure, adopting Azure VMs and Azure services instead of trying to lift or shift over to AVS, right?
Right.
So that's an entire reengineering effort. You know, at the very least, you need to understand you're going to be adopting an entirely different set of management tools for your VMs in Azure. So a lot of the practices and tool sets that your operations people are used to will have to change. You know, your deployment pipelines, all that's going to be different. And of course, it's not just the VMs, it's the underlying infrastructure. Azure storage is different, your networking, your identity management, all that kind of thing. And, you know, pardon the promo, but for Direction subscribers, we've got roadmaps on Azure networking, Azure storage, Entra ID, Azure VMs that are probably a good place to start the research to help you focus those efforts. So if you're looking at that, that's your jumping off point to help you quickly figure out where you want to narrow down your research. And I've also got a good report on Azure server management tools. Again, to let you know everything that's out there. If you search our site for Azure Focus Server Management, that's going to be the first thing that pops up. But you need to know all of this stuff. It's VMs, okay. But all of the stuff for managing it and the infrastructure and all the underlying things, it's different. It's a different platform. One other tool I would do want to mention that'll be handy that can hopefully help you if you're doing that, that will help you narrow things down quickly is there's Azure Migrate, which is actually free to use from Microsoft, and it can evaluate your VMware estate and give you recommendations on the VM sizes and configurations in Azure and even help replicate those VMs to Azure. I mean, I wouldn't accept its recommendations blindly. It installs a little, you know, a little virtual appliance in your VMware estate, scans out and checks everything, but it can help you get that inventory and some initial recommendations to build off, because that's really the big thing. You've got so much out there that you need to figure out. So your goal is like, can I quickly just narrow down what I need to focus on to make that transition?
Mm-hmm. I think that's also one of the key things too, as I think about this, is, you know, the reality that a lot of customers are doing this, they're considering going to Azure and maybe thinking about AVS or VMware Cloud and AWS in the past. And as you compare and contrast, they're looking at, how do I get out of my on-prem infrastructure? And all the stuff Jim pointed out is a really great way to segue from on-prem to those cloud offerings. And it's sort of that lift and shift. And then, of course, the ideal is you want to take advantage of the cloud that you're in. And that's where thinking about going longer term to VMs or cloud native services is a better position, and you'll start saving more over the long run. Unfortunately, we see a lot of customers with licensing bootcamp who, it's a lift and shift run, and then as soon as they're done, it's just walk away, and you keep letting it run in the cloud, which that's right. Obviously, you know, 5-year runtime. Microsoft is clearly hoping that people are willing to do that on AWS and just forget about it. Just walk away. It'll be fine.
Yeah. And I mean, and we make all these noises. Oh, you should plan. You should do this. But I mean, we know the reality. The reality is, you know, as an operations person, you get an edict from on high, move us in a month. And so you do the lift and shift, the bare necessities to get things up and running. And then you're called to work on the next fire. So we're trying to help you find an idealized position and quickly narrow down what you've got to research to do this. But if you can invest the time when you do that and actually re-engineer more than just lift and shift, you know, you'll get more efficiency out of it and hopefully save your organization money.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Good point to take a quick break so I can talk about a series of podcasts that we actually recorded last year dedicated to EAs, enterprise agreements. We created a 6-part podcast series featuring various members of our advisory services team led by Dean Bedwell, all about the Microsoft EA negotiation process. Before he joined Directions, Dean spent 11 years at Microsoft managing the Canadian business desk, where he was responsible for negotiating agreements with Microsoft's largest enterprise and public sector customers. So he definitely knows what he's talking about. In our series, we discuss everything from project management to discovery, analysis, strategies for getting discounts and concessions, and negotiation levers. Whether you are new to EA negotiation or a veteran who wants to hear more about the tips and tricks that we've discovered over the years, you should check out our Microsoft EA negotiation podcasts. Go to directionsonmicrosoft.com/podcast or directionsonmicrosoft.com/videos, and you can listen to the full series for free. You don't need to be a member. We also created a free deep dive explainer about the Microsoft EA negotiation process that you can get for free on our site as well. Go to directionsonmicrosoft.com and the resources tab there, and you can read any and all of our deep dive reports again for free. Directions offers advisory services such as EA negotiation support and Microsoft strategy assessments, where we help you one-on-one with your specific Microsoft product questions and licensing issues. Go to directionsonmicrosoft.com, or you can email info@directionsonmicrosoft.com to learn more about all of our services. Back to virtualization, hypervisors, and bears in Central Park with Wes and Jim. Come on, I had to get at least one election joke in there, right?
Yeah, and you're a New Yorker, so yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it works.
All right, so we've been talking about cloud up to this point, but what about those VMware customers who still want and or need on-prem solutions? What are their Windows Server options?
So you just said it. I mean, it's Windows Server.
Right.
yeah, exactly. Using the Hyper-V rule. Inside Windows Server, that provides virtualization. Some customers may remember Hyper-V Server, which was a server product that just had the Hyper-V role and a few things to support it that was free, but you had to do additional licensing. Forget about that. I'm sorry. It's dead. They haven't updated it since the 2019 version. They're not going to make a new version of it. That's Stack HCI, which we'll talk about in a little bit. So your hypervisor is going to be Hyper-V. You're going to be probably want Windows Server Data Center Edition because that has unlimited virtualization rights. So that's most likely going to be what you want, although you could conceivably use Windows Server Standard for small deployments. So for example, I used to manage a company that had managed IT for a company that had a lot of small regional offices, and you put basically Windows Server Standard, and that gives you the rights to run two operating system environments, two VMs that could do two little things, and that's it, and you're cool. Mm-hmm. But for larger stuff, you know, you need data center. If you've got vSAN storage, the VMware vSAN storage, you probably want to look at moving to Storage Spaces Direct, which is Microsoft's converged storage solution. But if you're using something like a NetApp SAN, then you can just keep using what you're using. It'll connect to Windows. That's not a problem. And a useful thing about Windows Server in this particular scenario is it can probably run on the same physical hosts they've been using for VMware. I mean, those, you know, those VMware hosts can just run Windows Server and you're good to go. Licensing those hosts for Windows Server VMs is essentially the same. You still license by cores in the host. Wes, again, licensing, I'll hand the baton, hand the talking stick over to you for this one.
Yeah, I think that's actually a fundamental point. You know, it's interesting when we do the boot camps, because a lot of the time we're enlightening people. They get a it's an unfortunate aha moment, like, I got to go back and fix that. But also there's sometimes then they get a, this is a good surprise. Well, the good surprise for a lot of VMware customers is you're probably already licensed for data center because you got it for the virtualization rights. So you could run an unlimited number of VMs on a VMware host. And that always blows people's minds. Why am I paying for Microsoft's premium product if I'm using somebody else's hypervisor? Because you're paying for the Windows, not for the host. But the fact that you were already paying for that host means that you actually may already have a license to do it with Windows Server, Azure Stack HCI. We'll circle back around and talk about that separately. But it's a fundamental thing that a lot of people sometimes forget about. So you may already actually have a license for that host.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one other thing I'll throw in here real quick, since I mentioned it earlier, like a System Center in this case is probably going to be your management plane of choice if you're not already using it for all those on-prem Windows Server VMs. VMM and System Center, Virtual Machine Manager, that's got tools to help you convert VMware VMs to Hyper-V. And there's a lot of latitude to start using Azure-based management tools, leveraging Azure Arc. But mm-hmm. Azure Arc is an entire discussion in and of itself, and goes back to some of those reports I mentioned earlier in the podcast.
One thing I do want to do a quick mention, though, is that Config Manager, it obviously officially still sort of being part of whatever. It's a part of System Center functionally, but it is easily the most ignored product in terms of server technology. So I've seen a lot of customers looking at moving away from it and using something much similar, or much easier, much more basic. If all they're doing is patch management and looking at things like the Azure Patch Management, for example. So I think long term, if companies are heavily invested in Config Manager for server management, do be careful. And I do write about this periodically, because it isn't getting the love that you want it to in terms of managing your server infrastructure. So you probably want to be thinking about alternatives, whether it's Azure or something else.
Definitely.
Okay. Great. Okay, we've talked around this a bit, so let's talk about Azure Stack HCI. What are the pluses and minuses of going this route if you're a VMware customer?
Okay, so Stack HCI is really what Microsoft's been targeting at VMware customers even before the Broadcom changes. Although it's still, you know, in the long run, I don't know if it's considered as stable as Windows Server, but that's a different discussion. It is based on Windows Server. Uses some of the Windows Server roles, but it's focused on just doing the hyper-converged computing infrastructure, thus HCI, for VMs, storage, and networking. So it's just focused on that. You're not going to take your Stack HCI server, and it's not going to give you a print server or a file server or or Active Directory. You're going to put VMs on it that do those roles. But Stack HCI is also subscription-based. So rather than being able to buy perpetual licenses, which maybe you like that about VMware, you've got to buy those subscription licenses and pay those on a regular basis. And it's also a product that, again, has regular updates that you have to take to stay in a supported state. You can't just park on a version for a long period of time. And if you're looking to be disconnected entirely, Stack HCI has got Azure Arc built in. It requires a connection to Azure for its billing, because that subscription is billed as an Azure service. So, you know, there's some pluses and minuses right there.
Yeah.
But really, I think one of the big plus sides is it's connected more into Azure. So if you do want to straddle the on-prem and Azure worlds, do hybrid stuff, it's easier to run some Azure services like Azure Kubernetes Service, or even locally host your VDI session hosts. If you're using Azure Virtual Desktop, you can put some of those VMware hosts actually on your Stack HCI host. And it's where Microsoft putting their new features first. So if you really if you really want to get the newest stuff fast, it's going to show up on Stack HCI first, and then it'll trickle over to Windows Server on a slower basis on that 2 to 3 year refresh cycle. And it inherits some of the licensing related benefits of Azure VMs. So you get the ESUs and all of that hybrid benefit stuff. Wes, you want to?
Sure. Yeah.
Expand it, please.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So one of the key things for people to understand is, again, if you were already paying for Data Center Edition and you have what's called software assurance, I'll quickly explain it for the people who aren't familiar with the dark art of licensing. SA is really just an agreement by a customer to pay a percentage each year for 3 years. And the main benefit you get, the easiest benefit to understand, is you get the next version for free. So you basically keep paying this annuity, you get the next version. And there's a whole bunch of other very important benefits you get, but the new version thing is the thing that originally led the parade. So why is this important? Because if you were already licensing Data Center Edition for your VMs, which you probably were if you had VMware, and you had software assurance, which you probably were if you weren't a customer who parked regularly, who sat still on different versions and would drop software assurance, that made sense, particularly during the reign of Windows XP, where we, right, Mary Jo, saw a little bit of a gap before the next version of Windows. sorry.
Good times.
Soon.
Good
too
times.
Too soon. So, but now that new version, right, is important enough that a lot of customers did treat Windows Server as evergreen. I need to have software assurance to keep paying for that. That's important because there is a whole original way that Azure Stack HCI was licensed as a service. And yes, it still requires all the technical interconnections that Jim talked about. You can't get rid of that. That's a part of the story. But within Data Center's software assurance rights, you now can run Azure Stack as the host as a part of those software assurance rights. Mainly that means that if you're already paying for Data Center Edition of Windows Server, you've got rights to run it in VMs, and you've got rights to run Azure Stack as your host, Azure Stack HCI as your host. So you're not paying anything in addition to the licensing you already had, while you're also possibly able to drop your VMware licensing. So it's something you have to look at the whole picture. This is something that we talk a fair amount about at the licensing boot camp, and I'm always happy to drill into with customers who are thinking about what's my longer term roadmap look like.
Yeah. So that's plus stuff. I do want to throw in one minus of it, though, a big minus, is Stack HCI, like the Windows Software Defined Data Center before it, it requires Microsoft certified hardware. You can't just throw together whatever. So that's not going to run on your existing VMware hardware, most likely. So you've got to probably gonna have to go out and buy new hardware if you decide you want to run Stack HCI. It would be part of a hardware refresh. And again, like I said, it's a subscription, no perpetual licenses allowed. And it, you know, you get those new benefits because it's on a faster cadence than Windows Server. And to stay supported, you've got to stay within 6 months of the most recent release. So again, I mean, I always recommend patching over not patching. The risk equation is clear. But that also applies to major releases in this case, where some customers might prefer to set and forget. So you can, you know, not only do you have to apply your patches, your patch updates, but a new major release of Stack HCI, you've got to apply that within 6 months as part of that subscription to stay supported. So these are, you know, again, part of that whole picture you have to consider, because there's going to be a little bit more, while it's not going to be maybe as traumatic as a major Windows Server upgrade, for example, it's still something that your operations team is going to have to absorb.
Okay, good advice, Jim. all right, I'm curious what, if anything, you think the changes in VMware will mean for Microsoft products moving forward. I mean, do you think they could lead Microsoft to do anything new or different with Windows Server or Hyper-V or Azure VMs or virtualization in general, or no?
Not really. I mean, okay. In the long term, this spells the eventual death of Azure, the eventual death of Azure VMware service. That's well over 5 years in the future. Mm-hmm. You know, basically when Broadcom decides that Microsoft isn't useful anymore, they'll start raising the prices. Microsoft will start phasing it out. But it's going to be, you know, people are signing up now for reserved instances. So Microsoft's got confidence that's going to live for a long time, at least. So for the foreseeable future, it's going to be around, but it'll suffer the eventual heat death. And it's always been a play about getting people to Azure anyway. It might encourage Microsoft to treat Stack HCI even more seriously, to put more resources into making it, really stable, real meaningful solution. As customers get more antsy about their VMware investment and look at Stack HCI as a solution. And I think we're going to see, it's quiet right now because it's summertime, but get ready for a big PR blitz, I think, late this year, because we're going to see the next version of Stack HCI. We're seeing the next major version of Windows Server. Windows Server 2025 is in preview and expected soon. And I think there's going to be a full-on blitz for all of Microsoft's server products.
So. Yeah.
Me too.
I think that's really absolutely agree. One of the things that's interesting too is looking back at the last, when you've got 12 years of boot camps to reflect on, the last year has been interesting because after the VMware moves, the Broadcom moves started happening, we had a couple of customers here and there asking about, what do I do? I'm a little nervous. And you got to remember, these are not necessarily the technologists, not the people who can sit there and describe how VMware infrastructure works. They're the people who, for their own unfortunate reasons, like myself, have been pulled towards the vortex of licensing. Mm-hmm. And they're usually procurement people. They're business and money people who are responsible for licensing things. So they're not familiar with all the intricacies of what VMware can do versus what Microsoft can do. But that said, over the last 3 boot camps in particular, there has definitely been an upsurge in the number of people asking us, both during, or even worse, during a break, because that usually means I have something I want to talk about, but not in front of everybody, about what do I do? We know we've got to do something. My CTO says, do something. What do we do? So I absolutely agree. We're going to hear a huge press push by Microsoft towards the end of the year, both about the new version, about the rapid migration plan, mm-hmm. trying to be the best cloud for VMware. You could just hear the Jumanji drums from here.
I'm telling you, Chicago in November, it may sound like a bad idea, but it might be a good idea.
Oh, yeah. And if you're listening here, if there's one thing I can just ask you to take away from this podcast, is if you're in one of these concerned situations, push now. Because if you're looking at Azure VMware solution, if you're looking at other stuff to make these changes, we all saw what happened. XP died when versions of Windows Server died, whatever. If you want to avoid a fire drill, start doing whatever planning you can now. And I know it's hard. I've been in the operations line, but please, just help yourself.
All right. On that note, I want to say thank you both so much. Pleasure chatting with you as always.
Thanks again for having us.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
To close, I want to remind our listeners they can find lots more coverage of all things Microsoft related on directionsonmicrosoft.com. Thank you so much for listening. If you have questions, comments, or any topics you would like to hear the directions analysts cover in one of these podcasts, please do not hesitate to contact me at Mary Jo Foley on X, also known as Twitter. And speaking of Twitter, give us a follow at DirectionsMSFT for all the latest Microsoft Enterprise product and licensing information. Thanks again.